You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I was doing better before I realized I'm shrinking, apparently. Your head's taller than your brain. I know how to fix it. I can try this, maybe.
Here we go. No, I just fixed it. There we go.
Yeah, look at that. You're magic. I am good. My daughter's in town.
Yeah.
I'll see my son in a week and a half. All is good.
Yeah, we're getting into the holiday season here, and, you know, where people are excited. It is also, David, we had our first championship game of the inaugural in-season tournament. Congratulations to the Los Angeles Lakers, the winners of the NBA Cup. And as LeBron said, you know, to be the first to do something in history, that's something special. No matter what they do going forward with this tournament, you'll never take that piece of it away. We were the first to do it. And that is a true statement. And David, as you know, I thought the tournament was a great idea. I thought it was a huge success. I really thought that, you know, we talk often about how when you are the best player in the game or the best player in the world, you have some responsibilities beyond just the basketball, right? Like, you are a global ambassador of the game, and there's just requirements that you have. And LeBron could have easily poo-pooed this tournament very early on and been like, oh, this is dumb, we're not doing it. We saw him do something similar with the in-season tournament, right? Was not a fan of it. The play-in tournament. Was not a fan of that when it first came out. Loved it now because that's how they got to the conference finals last year. But he took the approach of, no, this is great. I love it. We're going to try to win it. We want to be the first. It obviously trickled down through the rest of his team. And when he's doing it, it made it, as Pat Beverly said in the bubble, whatever LeBron says, that's what we do. So if LeBron takes it seriously, well, then everybody else is like, well, it's serious and we're doing it. And I just thought overall the tournament was fun, and kudos to the Lakers.
I have a few things to unpack with this. So the idea that LeBron can just say, okay, I'm going to win this tournament, is just so stupid. You didn't say that, but people have said that.
Right.
Because that would be arguing, well, I guess they didn't want to win the game against Denver last year in the Western Conference Finals. Like, it's great that he tried, as he should. They have a good team. They're loaded. Mm-hmm. Super talented. They should have been one of the teams competing for this championship. And they've been a little bit disappointing throughout some of the season. You know, the season's still pretty young. We're not mid-December yet. We haven't played 2 months of the season yet. I thought it was a smash hit. There are some major problems with it. Milwaukee had to play late a couple of nights before. They had to play early in Vegas. That's not a favor to anyone. And ran out of gas against Indiana. I really think in a day more of rest and they beat Indiana. Not definitely. I just think it's more likely that they do. No apologies for Indiana. You play the schedule you get and that's it. I think there are some opportunities that they can tweak. We can talk about if you want.
Yeah, for sure.
That'd be fun. But generally speaking, outside of playing it in Vegas, which I thought was a huge mistake.
Oh, did you? Tell me more. Why do you think that was a mistake?
Because I think they piped in the fans sound. I really do. I talk to people. I know. I have a lot of friends that were there. There's a reason why the theater seating was the way it was. Nobody was there. The Indiana game. This should
be early. It's very early. It's a very early game.
It was early 2 o'clock Vegas time. And they don't care. I'll be in Vegas soon enough. I won't be going into some basketball event. That's not why you go to Vegas. As I said, this is not something the NBA would love. Sioux Falls has a beautiful new arena. Beautiful. I watch the G League games that are played there a lot. Their fan base and many other fan bases would go nuts for the NBA coming to town. Don't play a game at 2 o'clock anywhere. especially on that day. And you and I both know why they did it the mm-hmm. way they did it. Mm-hmm. So I think that that could be handled better. I also think there's a chance to make some rule changes, add a 4-point line. And I don't mean just for the tournament. In fact, I'm less inclined to think that you should make changes for those two games.
Okay.
And I think I'm more inclined to think in the in-season tournament, don't just change the court. I don't care about the court. Change the rules of the game.
Mm.
No zone defensive rules. Play whatever you want to play. Your job is to keep them from scoring. We don't care what you do.
Okay.
As long as you play five guys. Can't play six. So I'd be all for that. I'd be all for a 4-point line. There's a number of things we could try to do that I think would be interesting and experimental. Let's just see how certain things go. Like, for example, FIBA rules or some of the FIBA rules. Can't call a timeout unless your team has the ball. Can't do it on a dead ball. There's there's whatever rules that FIBA does that we think would be good experience to have. Shorten the game in the regular season ones would be interesting. But as a first time event, have they decided? Oh, they're going to wait for the sponsor. It'll be Netflix's in-season tournament next year. The Amazon tournament, whatever.
Right, whoever pays the money for it. And I think, look, it was a success. I think, we can definitely do some tweaks. I know why they had it in Vegas for the obvious reasons. One, they're signaling, and it's very clear we're going to have a franchise here in the future. Two, the infrastructure for NBA already exists in Vegas because Summer League is there. So they don't have to do much heavy lifting. We already know how this works because we do it every summer. Three, let's also be real. When the NBA has events like this, whether it's NBA Paris or what have you, they're traveling the game, the big wigs and the head honchos from the NBA go. They want to go to a nice place when they're going to places, right? And Vegas is a nice place.
Yeah.
No offense to Sioux Falls.
No, there's no comparison weather-wise. And things to do, place to eat. Come on. Sioux Falls doesn't have what Vegas has.
No, it's why you pick Vegas. Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing it potentially rotate to a different city every year.
Yeah.
Now, you know, your challenge with that is because I heard some people talk about, well, you know, if it's in Vegas and if the Lakers are there or any of the California teams, it's such an unfair advantage because it's such a close flight and they're going to have so many more fans, right? And I'm like, well, the Lakers are going to have fans wherever they go. That's just kind of how that franchise is. But I wouldn't mind moving it around a bit. That would be interesting. Maybe one year you do it in Paris, like the NBA has their Paris game coming up in January. Now, you have logistical and travel situations with that, as David mentioned, where you don't want one team flying in late on the Tuesday and got to play the first early game 24 hours later. That's not fair to them. So you got to try to make it competitive, balanced enough so that one team doesn't have a clear advantage over somebody else. But, you know, I think the challenge with that is that these arenas and the dates and
are booked all the time.
Man. It's right. And it's a very difficult thing to do when they, you know, the NBA doesn't try to make it easy for one team and not, they try to make it as fair as possible. That's the one thing I will say. As you guys know, we criticize the NBA heavily here. Yeah. They do try to make it fair for everybody. It's just impossible with the way this thing works. Like, it's just too many games, too much travel involved, too many teams. But again, I was very happy with the first tournament and how it went.
Yeah. Looking forward to see what tweaks they make in the offseason.
Absolutely. And so, David, the Lakers were outstanding in that championship game. Really, you saw the things that make them really good, their size and their length and their defensive capability.
One guy's size and length.
Anthony Davis is for sure. But I also thought that on defense, Jared Vanderbilt's wingspan, I thought Cam Reddish's wingspan, when they would blitz and trap, you always say the hardest thing to do in the NBA is score over length, right? I might also include that to say execute consistently over length, right? Because it's just hard. Just hands in your face, harder to see, harder to get passes off, harder to do a lot of different things. And I thought that they did a good job of sort of saying, okay, Tyrese Halliburton, you're not going to do 38 and 15 against us. Let's see if these other guys can hit wide open threes. They did not. Anthony Davis, as you mentioned, was an absolute monster.
He was the best player on the court.
I thought, to me, David, defensively, yes, I know he scored 40 points, but
defensively, and 20 rebounds.
He was just outstanding. The second efforts, block shots, just the altered shots. I was like, man, this dude. Yeah.
His paint presence was the biggest factor. Remember, the Pacers lead the league in points in the paint.
Yes.
And got Bubkus.
Nothing.
Very low numbers and shot poorly. Mm-hmm. And they were in the game. To the fourth quarter.
Within three with 10 minutes to go in the fourth. So,
it was a good game. And then LA kind of ran away. AD was everything we know he can be. I mean, I thought he'd be the MVP a couple of 3 years ago I thought he could do this more often. He can't so far anyway.
Right.
He's not been able to. But over the course of any one game, he can be the best player on the court that has LeBron on it.
And I think that's the other thing about this tournament that I think is so interesting. Unlike the NBA playoffs, which while it is a shorter amount of time than the regular season, it's still, that is not a sprint. We were doing running analogies the other day. If the NBA regular season is a marathon, the NBA playoffs is like a 10 miler or a 9.5 mile race, right? So shorter than a marathon, but you're not sprinting 9.5 or 10 miles, right? You have game to game adjustments, right? You have 7 games played out over 12 days. All your weaknesses get exposed in a 7-game series. In a one-off, you're doing the right things well. We can't shoot well from three. That may not matter if I'm doing all these other things really well. And I thought that format really helped the Lakers. It helped Indiana too, right? Because as you say, that style they play, hard to replicate and simulate. And so I thought the single game format was so interesting. And I thought you saw some of that in that game against the Lakers and Pacers.
We see it every year in the NCAA tournament. And as someone who grew up doing high school basketball, when I first started coaching, you didn't have to win a series. You had to win a game. You had to find a way to win a game. And if they played tomorrow, Indiana could easily win that game.
Sure.
Indiana was missing, a key defender who played really well to get them there. In fact, I would argue was their most important player during a stretch of the third quarter, Andrew Nembhard. Agreed. Against Milwaukee.
He just shut down Dame.
Mm-hmm. He guarded Dame and also solved Milwaukee's zone that was having real impact. And he literally scored 6 points on 3 shots in the middle of that zone. And that really opened things up for them. Nonetheless, they shot poorly. The Lakers deserve some credit. I always believe any one game, there's randomness to it. There's variability to it. But I also think that even in any one game, when you talk about length, quickness, executing a strategy defensively, you can make pace, physicality, you can make a team less comfortable and just increase the odds of them shooting poorly. That's all. Or the alternative is also true. Yeah. Don't do those things. I was talking to an NBA player recently who had a guard, one of the best players in the world, a shooter. And he did a great job. And he said afterwards, I didn't just try to guard him tight when he had the ball. I bumped him all the time. I tried to bother him. And I just saw, I don't remember, you may know better than me, maybe you even brought it up. There was a clip of some great defensive soccer player, football player in Europe, going up against a great striker. And the video story, like every chance this guy got, he hit him. He bumped him. Even when the play was dead, he found a way to bump him. Just be a thorn. And Hoosiers, Gene Hackman tells Buddy, I think it is, I want to know what flavor gum he's chewing. There's a mentality to that. And I think that the Lakers had that. And it bothered Indiana. Miles Turner looked like he owed Anthony Davis money. It was really bad. He really got his ass kicked. And he ain't the first guy. And it won't be the last guy. And so now the question is, okay, L.A., some people have thought you were loaded last year, me.
Yep.
I said the same thing this year, loaded. They have every reason to think they should win a championship. Now what? You've proven you can be the best in this one tournament. Big difference.
In
the grind of the playoffs. We know you have a fragile center who's also incredible. You've got an aged power forward who is still incredible. It's just a walking plus-minus machine. Wherever he's on the court, his team tends to win the possessions, wins more possessions. Lots of depth, another rising star in Austin Reeves. All right, Darvin Ham ain't a rookie coach anymore. He's got this in his back pocket now. He's got a trophy. What do you got? Because the West is wide open. Denver has some flaws.
Yes.
Like Phoenix has some flaws. LA absolutely could win the West. Now let's see what they do.
So you mentioned strategy and defensively and a disposition, and something you always talk about is a disposition to dominate.
Yeah.
And I thought that Anthony Davis clearly had that from
he had a snarl
from
in his face.
Yeah. Jump. Yeah. And we talk about that. As a coach, it's always easier for you if your player naturally has that, right? Of course, that just makes your job so much easier. But not everybody's like that. Can you coach a player to have the disposition to dominate, and how do you go about doing that?
Well, I as I told you guys off air earlier, I've had debates with college coaches for years about this, going back to my high school days as a coach. I definitely could, but I had high school players, And so college coaches would argue with me, well, you can't when they get to college. Maybe. That's not been my experience. Even with NBA players, I've helped guys develop a much – sometimes it starts with just having a better strategy to defend. So I had a player, one of the best shooters in the NBA, who had always been a real minus defender, which is why they called me to get me involved. And I told him the first problem is – he's still playing now – is you're just too passive on the ball. You're a sitting duck. I'd be an angry bear. That's exactly what I said to him. Reaching, clawing, grabbing, just be nasty. He was a nasty guy anyway, just not on defense. He was nasty on offense. Be nasty and make them uncomfortable. And the one of the first games he played, he went up against Melo. This is going back a few years now, obviously. And three straight times, Melo posted him. And my guy was like clawing, like a big bear. Like clawing at him, like he wiping, swatting at bees and trying to get the honey. Just be a pest, man. Be a pain in the ass. And I don't remember exactly what happened. Melo didn't score all three times. I don't think he shot all three times either. And then he stopped trying to post him up. He waited till some other dude guard him, and then he would go cook him. And that totally transformed my player's mindset of, well, wait a second. I don't have to be the victim waiting to be screwed, right? I can be aggressive. And not you can't do that with everyone, obviously. Everyone's different. But I do think you can have some impact. I think this goes to the identity of a team, starting with the coach and maybe even management. How do you identify as a franchise? Where do you get most pride in? I have a young player I'm helping in the G League who's scoring a lot of points, and I think his defense has suffered. And he's admitted to me. He's admitted that to me, that he's not as focused because he's having fun scoring. And but yeah, I think that the key to the Lakers when they won in the bubble. And let me say this: you and I do not apologize for the Lakers championship.
No,
in the bubble.
Those are under the same conditions.
Those are stupid Lakers haters. I thought they were the best team, and they won, and they should have won. And this tournament was a fair tournament for everyone.
Correct.
And the Lakers won it fair and square. Period. That's end of story. They beat some good teams to do it. And they're champs, and they deserve that. I think that they in the bubble, they had a disposition to dominate. They really did. They led the league, if I remember correctly, in dunks and blocks. Mm-hmm. Like, that ain't an accident. Like that, and that carries a little gravitas to it. Mm-hmm. Well, this team isn't that team, but they have plenty of moving parts that can really establish a dominance. And Cam Reddish, and Austin Reeves too, two young players that should have some extra energy in their legs come May and June if they get that far. They're a legit candidate.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I thought, again, the Lakers, just phenomenal. Again, that disposition to dominate. They were just excellent start to finish. They got good minutes and good production on a lot of guys. By the way, in a single game, so you know people don't want to lose your mind about it, but Cam Reddish was highest plus minus in that game, plus 24. Of course, he showed the court a ton with LeBron and AD, but still, right? He went out there. I thought he did some great things. Their athleticism and length on the perimeter, I think, is big for them. When you're talking about, hey, how do we shut down the league's best apex predator wings? Well, it helps when you have a bunch of dudes with 7-foot wingspans who can guard out there, right? Plus AD, plus LeBron James. And of course, you know, what else can I say about LeBron? I mean, the dude's won everything there is to win. He added this to his list. I thought the whole in-season tournament, including the group stage play, he really played with a verve that he doesn't always play with, because hello, you can't do that for 82 games, especially at his age. And it was just impressive to see that he really was locked in. And you know, there's always clips going around. There's one that I don't know if you saw it, David. He was telling, because Miles Turner's a pretty good shot blocker. And he was talking to AD about, like, no. Next time he comes down, take one extra dribble, get into his body. Right? That's how you negate him. And you saw AD literally immediately do it the next time down. And I was like, oh, listen to LeBron. It's a good lesson that most people should have.
I did not see it. There's zero chance AD didn't know about that.
No doubt.
But this is an important point. I say this all the time to some of the better players that I help. I'm not necessarily teaching you anything. Mm-hmm. I'm just making you mindful of something you may otherwise have forgotten about. We do this all the time as human beings. Right, I don't have to learn. My wife isn't still teaching me stuff all the time, although she still teaches me a lot. But she will make me mindful of something that I wasn't mindful of for the million different reasons that, you know, we can have. So yeah, so that part was good. I also think LeBron, being a student of history, also is a, I know people have talked about legacy. I normally think that's contrived bullshit. I don't think that's that case here. No. I think LeBron did think, you know, I'm going to be 70 years old one day, and they're going to be, yeah, I'm going to be at a game. My grandkids are going to be playing or whatever. And they, and when they talk about LeBron James, this, the, I want this. It's something Michael Jordan didn't have.
Correct.
He, you could argue that he would have probably won it. He probably would have won it.
Right.
But he didn't.
He didn't.
I did. Magic Johnson. Nope. Larry Bird. Nope. Kareem. Nope. I did. And he ain't retiring.
Correct.
So get ready next year. He's going to try to bring it next year too.
Yeah. No, it's wonderful. And yeah, the Lakers, as David said, they are a good team on our true call this morning. Henry's like, no, this tournament's great for the Lakers, because he's like, they are not winning the NBA championship. And there's a million
back on that.
And you did. And David definitely pushed back. And, you know,
his point is very good.
They're right. I mean, the odds that they're healthy also is probably not likely. Yeah. Right. And again, as I mentioned, a best of seven throughout the, is very different than any one-off game. I mean, we saw it last year against the Denver Nuggets, right? The Lakers were in every game just about, but their cracks and their flaws showed.
They couldn't close against that team. Yeah.
It just is what it is. All right. Let's move on to the Indiana Pacers, David, because while they did not win, well, not for you and I, because you had, we both had Tyrese on our All-NBA team last year, even though he didn't play the full end of the season. The rest of the world got an introduction into Tyrese Halliburton, and it's great for casual fans and everybody to know that there are players outside of LA and New York and Miami, good players all around the league. So that was great. Look, Indiana, as you mentioned, they're a flawed team, right? First in offense, great pace, all that, but they can't guard anybody in the telephone booth. They're just bad. And they missed Andrew Nembhard, who is their best defender. That didn't help either. But I was really happy and impressed with what the Pacers did, as you mentioned early in the week. Good learning reference points Carlisle can point to. The intensity, again, you didn't have the game-to-game adjustment over a seven-game series, but the intensity was playoff-like. And for those guys, none of them, except for Miles, none of them been in the playoff, Bruce Brown. So what do they know about playoff intensity? Well, they got a little bit of taste of that, of what that's like, and that'll only help Indiana going forward.
Yeah, Rick Carlisle talked about this in their, I want to say, it wasn't even in season game necessarily, but it might have been. They played some big, a game that was very competitive. It was Atlanta in their same group. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
So Atlanta, it might have been the Atlanta game where they found a way to win. And
high scoring game, late. Yep.
Yeah, right. Very high scoring game, super high scoring game. And Rick commented on it way back in early November, whatever, that, you know, we need these kinds of games, this special feeling, this intensity. I did not notice the semifinal game, but I think it was my brother. One of my brothers told me the bench was going crazy at the end of the bench, the two-way guys.
Yeah, everybody's
because out. I explained to them, they're only making half a mil. Ain't nothing, but ain't what NBA players make. And so every 100,000, that's a big deal. That's a big damn raise, right? So that part is fun. Yeah, so Indiana, they've got some choices to make. They've got Buddy Hield and TJ McConnell, who will be more valuable to contenders than them in the grand scheme of things. I think that's one reason why they're playing a good amount, not some of their young guys, is to trade them and get more for them. It's not about showcasing as much as you have to remind these teams all the time of who these guys are, or they'll try to give you a future third round pick for a guy that clearly is better than that.
Right.
So they've got, if they choose not to do it, then they'll be better this year. I think they should make a move towards youth, not tank, but just, you know, Ben Mathurin needs a lot of work. Andrew Nembhard needs a lot of work. Isaiah Jackson, I love Isaiah Jackson.
He needs work too.
He needs a lot of work. Jalen Smith was out. They went to Smith and Nembhard. They're missing Jalen also. So,
and Jairus Walker.
Yep. And Jairus hasn't played at all, but I saw him in the G League. He killed the G League game. I saw very talented player, top 10 pick in this last year's draft. They've got a foothold, and they've got an All-NBA talent to start the process with. So they've got a good future, you know, a solid coach, good organization. They need Miles Turner to play better. He's not been playing great. He definitely was bad in the AD game, although not a lot of centers would have been good the way AD was playing.
He's got it all.
He's that guy. Has been. It's what he went number one for a reason way back in the day. So, but yeah, Indiana fans should be heartened that they did what they did. And the other guys made an extra $200K, which is nice.
Nothing to sneeze
at. Made $200K. Yeah.
And we'll get back to Halliburton in a minute. So if you were Kelvin Pritchard or advising Kelvin Pritchard, you would say, look, you got the young talent. Don't go all in now for a OG or a Pascal. No. Like, don't do that.
Well, that's what people are reporting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it may happen. That's right. But I would not advise them to do that. Yeah. I think they'd be smarter to see how the season plays out and really get a feel for what you have. For example, if Siakam is not shooting the three at all well, and so he's not even shooting now because he's shooting so poorly, playing great, he matches up great with a good playing Miles Turner. If Miles Turner ends up being a guy that just doesn't finish the season well and you have to trade him, and so now your center is Isaiah Jackson, who's not a non-shooter. I don't like him and Siakam together. So I think they're better off waiting. OG is a little bit different. He's an easier fit. Not as good a player as Pascal, but easier fit. He's younger. Right. And you still have to deal with the contract he would have. I think you're better off waiting, but I'm not sure they will. And I would almost lean that they're not going to, because I think they feel like we can push into the top four. And they're right. Wow. They might.
And that's that push-pull you have, David, right? Because when you think you can get into the top four, whether it happens or not, these windows aren't open forever, right?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Like, look at Memphis, right? Things just happen to you sometimes that you don't foresee. So you got to try to go on all you can, right? So maybe they will. We'll see. That leads me to my Halliburton point. How valuable was that championship game for Halliburton insofar as they treated him like they would treat any top one guy on top of the scouting report? Doubles, traps, to get the right. He got that experience of that. Again, he hasn't played the playoffs yet, and you don't normally see that in a regular season.
But he has. It's a good point you're making, but he has. Not consistently, but yes, there have been teams in fourth quarters or like six to go in the fourth who have said, we're not letting this one guy beat us. So it just adds to that. It adds, but not with the same intensity this game had.
Right.
For sure. And the length of the Lakers, whatever. Yeah, it's just guys like that have constantly found ways to figure things out. Remember, he's not very athletic. He's not super tall. I mean, he's tall for a human being, not for an NBA player. Right. Really improved his handle, really improved his shooting. It has always been a great shooter in the NBA. It's becoming a better scorer, which is, I think, a big part of his story. So he's always found a way to kind of surmount whatever obstacles are in front. He's a good guy to bet on going forward. It's the reason why he deserves that extension he got, that max extension.
No, and again, kudos to Indiana, and let's watch them closely and see what they do. David, one last thing about the in-season tournament that we'll talk about, and this is, you know, we talked about a lot of positives and excitement. This is a negative thing, and it's something that has us concerned. Zion Williamson and the New Orleans Pelicans just did not look great in that semifinal game.
He looked really bad.
He looked bad in that semifinal game. And I just don't know what is going on with them. I know you have a little bit of insight. You can share some. I just feel like there's worrying signs around him. We talked about what happened this summer with all the stuff with the various women. I don't know. I don't know what to think and what is to become of this person who 3-4 years ago was going to be the face of the league and the best player.
So the few things I can speak on expertly is, number one, what we saw in that game was an embarrassment. Jogging everywhere, not engaged with the intensity that everyone else seemed to have. He looked like he didn't really care. That's a bad sign. I have not felt that way about him this year. And I thought in the last couple weeks, he was really coming as a player. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of mark his progress as a player. And that just plummeted in that game. So, I mean, he could have the flu. His knee could have been sore. Any one game shouldn't define. But it already was trending down a little bit from the previous game. I think it was in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. Sacramento. Yeah, he was just okay in that game. Brandon Ingram was good.
Yeah.
But years ago, and I probably have said this once before on air, I don't remember. So a few years ago when he got hurt and went to Portland, we were told he was in Portland, had not been released publicly, and I was told in confidence that he was already in Portland, not in New Orleans.
Right. Rehabbing, just during the injury.
Correct. He was rehabbing there or whatever he was doing. But I got a call asking if I would be willing to even talk to him, that he was losing his love for basketball, like really disinterested. And I said, of course, I'd be happy to talk to him. But I also said, it's easy to not be in love with basketball when all you're doing is not playing basketball. Mm-hmm. Whatever recovery he was doing, I didn't know what he was doing. going back before that, we were told as rookies, this was in summer league. I was hearing reports from people in the know, agents and so forth, who were saying the Pelicans were alarmed that he was doing like concrete workouts because his family was insisting that's how we made him into Zion Williamson to begin with. So who are you to tell us we can't do workouts on concrete after he's done practicing with the Pelicans? This was summer league. And it may be public, I don't know. But there's always been a butting of heads between what New Orleans best wants for him, and this is not news, and what his own team Zion wants for him. It's not working. He's 23, not ancient. That's Halliburton's age. You should be trending on an escalator going up, and it's just kind of the opposite right now. It's more just meandering up and down a little bit. It's cause for concern. Sometimes, though, you have to shed light. You have to have a diagnosis before you can solve anything. And you first have to see the symptom. What's the problem? Well, the problem is, in a huge game for us, he didn't care. He played like he didn't care. Put it that way. He played like he didn't care. Maybe he did care. He played like he did. He answered, I thought, things well in the post-conference, the post-press conference, post-game. He seemed to be contrite about his issues.
Right.
But it's a problem that has to be addressed.
Yeah, and especially for New Orleans, right? Because the rookie max extension's already signed and out there, right? Yeah. So he's under contract. And, you know, I always say this, when you sign someone to any kind of the deal of that magnitude and they don't work out, it's not like you can just be like, all right, I'm just going to get somebody else. Like, no, like you're pot committed, right? To take a poker term. So there's got to be some kind of figuring it out. And I just hope that whoever's working with him behind the scenes on Team Zion, they have a moment where they're like, this is not going how we expected. You know, and can we get the right people in here to make this better? Because he's so young, no one's really ready to give up. But it's just, if you're a New Orleans Pelican fan and just a human being, you can't be excited about what you're seeing.
Well, and I'll add this. My former client, Corey Brewer, is one of the guys that works him out every day with the Pelicans. And I don't talk to Corey about it at all. I feel like this is such a sensitive issue. I need to leave him be. Mm-hmm. I've not asked for anything about him. And if he wanted to call me, he could, but he hasn't yet about Zion. But he is a very energizing, fun, funny, brilliant guy. I've had NBA assistant coaches tell me, Corey Brewer is the smartest guy in any room you walk into for basketball. He ain't dumb about non-basketball stuff either, but definitely a genius when it comes to basketball for sure. And if he can't get you excited, something's wrong. He is like, he knows how to energize the room, man. He does. And so, yeah, I've got real cause for concern. And he's got good players around him.
Yeah.
He's got a super solid center in Valanciunas. Obviously, Ingram's an elite level talent. CJ is a total pro and on and on. The team is surrounded. The team is ready to be great.
Yeah.
He just needs to step up.
Absolutely. All right, guys, we'll be back after a brief commercial break. Okay, David, we generally have a rule on this podcast that we do not talk about bad teams.
Well, you know why we have that rule.
No, why do we have that rule?
Because I have no patience for bad teams.
That's right, yes. That's a given.
But you're in charge of it, so we can break any rules we want.
It's so funny. When I watch basketball, like a defender foul someone, I'm like, guys, Thorpe's rule number one. Don't fucking foul. What are you doing? What are you doing?
So stupid. I watched more layups miss than in the best league in the world when you don't foul guys. They still miss shots all the time. Quit fucking fouling people. God damn. My wife would laugh. You know, in our gift guide that we just did, you know, Henry wrote and said, he remembered my old Starbucks order. Yep. So I used to work out every day at 3 when I first started losing a bunch of weight a decade ago, whenever it was. I would go to Starbucks after the workout because that was like my appetite suppressant. Mm-hmm. I would get venti, ice, green tea, light ice, unsweetened. And I was on the phone with Henry all the time. We were both at ESPN. And sometimes I'd even press speaker and say, Henry, tell him what the order is, and he would do it, you know? But my wife could be that way as it relates to my reaction when people foul other people. She knows, like, what the fuck are you doing? She was like, 45% chance to make the shot. Stop. Stop. No, you want to foul Giannis, make sure he doesn't dunk it. That's a different story.
Totally different.
Yeah. Although he only gets 6 fouls in a game in the NBA. But yeah, that's true.
I love it. Thorpe's rule number one, people. Don't fucking foul.
Don't fucking foul. Yeah, that's right.
All right. So we're gonna talk about the Memphis Grizzlies because they're bad, but they have the return of John Morant coming in four games here. So it looks like next Tuesday would be the next game he'd be available for.
Okay.
Now, look, the Grizzlies are not good right now, right? They are 6-15. They're bad. They are 11 games out of first, and they are 5 games back at the 10th spot. So just to get into the play-in, they're going to have to go on a hell of a run when John Morant comes back, which could happen, but likelihood says not. Does it matter, David, that John Morant's coming back?
Well, do you know what they're ranked defensively?
They're still like top 10 at the 10th.
Yeah, 12th.
12th, right, yeah, right they're still very good defensively.
So they're 27th on offense. What is just John Morant showing up in shape? Come on. Top 18, top 17.
Yeah, get him to 15th.
Could be 15, 14, 13. Mm-hmm. Like, and we've talked about this before. He brings... He's one of those guys that when you walk, I coached long enough in high school and AAU that there were teams that we had where we had the best player on the court. And the swagger that would get, it didn't matter all the work I did to prepare our team or whatever. I shouldn't say it didn't matter. It mattered less than they knew, oh, we got this cat. You guys don't have anything like him. And everyone played better because of it. And I used to do this in practice all the time. The same guys in practice, if I made sure my best player didn't, you know, sitting out resting, would not have that same confidence. When he's there, it just changed everything. Makes it easier. That's not rocket science. John Morant's one of those guys. The dynamic aspect of his game, I think, can be really infectious. And also, why he's missed. I think we haven't seen this much. Mm-hmm. It's a very long suspension.
Yes.
Right. How often has a player been suspended for 25 games at the start of the year?
No, I mean, when you talk about games like that, that's like Malice in the Palace stuff. That's like,
it's
very
rare.
Right.
And so it's an interesting, we'll see. He is the leader of that team for better and for worse. Mm-hmm. But he's a bad dude on the court.
He is.
And that really can give these guys a little energy that maybe they're lacking.
So it's lovely. I'd love to ask you this. And again, it's different because you had high school guys, but you can still kind of, you know, human beings are human beings.
Right.
So Ja Morant put himself in a bad position that cost the team by not being around. And I always said before the Ja Trey thing, I'm like, Trey's guys look like they're having fun playing with him. Ja's players look like they love playing with Ja.
I agree.
Does Ja lose any of that because of what he did by his own dumb foolishness? Does that lessen his standing in any of his teammates' eyes? And if it does, how does he go about reestablishing that?
It's a really fantastic question. And I think the answer probably lies in how Ja handles himself on the court. In other words, is he shaken by what's happened? Because that may impact how he goes about the charismatic way he performs. The balls to the wall, never say die, compete your motherfucking ass off. He does those things and contrite off the court. I fucked up. I've grown a lot. I'm glad I caught this in a sense and I got to fix whatever it was causing me to do the things I was doing. But I'm still the same motherfucker I was before on the court and we're out for blood now. Yeah, maybe not use that term, but hearing what happened to him. It wasn't like he had trouble eating too much cotton candy. If he gets back that swagger, like I'm back and my boys are here with me, we're together, I think it can have a good impact. If he's a little bit reticent, a little bit reluctant to strut because of his wings have been clipped. Mm-hmm. And almost maybe even embarrassingly so. Mm-hmm. Then it's bad for the franchise. But I don't believe that'll be the case. He's a young guy. Yeah. I say this with all due respect. He's big. How old is he? 23?
Yeah.
Is he 23?
24? Yeah, 24.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, I've got almost 23-year-old twins. They're not very smart guys. They're smart. They claim they're smart. John's very smart for his age and worldly now, being an NBA millionaire or whatever. But there's a lot of maturing these young people can go through. So, but I think that's going to serve him well. I certainly at that age had zero ability to self-reflect. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I didn't make some sea changes in my life. In 20 seconds, I can tell you, I subscribed to the Washington Post the year I got married. The year after. So I was 26. And our paper, St. B. Times back then, was amazing and probably liberally slanted. but mostly I read the sports section for this because it was an amazing sports section. Reading the Washington Post completely changed my views as a more conservative aligned, although socially very liberal person to a very, very liberal person now. But I didn't really think about it. It just kind of happened. Mm-hmm. Then I grew up a little bit, got into my 30s and became a dad and started genuinely thinking for hours and days and days and days about how I was proceeding with my life and what impact I wanted to make and where I could really grow and change. I think most of us have a similar story. Or maybe I was a little bit of a late bloomer, but Josh had that chance. I don't know what he's been doing with therapy, but my guess is they've been exploring those things.
Yeah.
So sure. We could see a fully formed John Morant at a young age responding to what's happened because it is, and he's a dad. Am I right?
Yes, he is. Yeah. He has a daughter.
I guarantee you he cares about that. Guarantee
for sure.
You.
For sure.
It means a lot to him. What, you know, his kids are never going to have to worry about money, probably. Never going to have to worry, probably. But so that's, check that box. Great. But now what else are you doing? But that, all the other stuff matters too. Mm-hmm. And so I am taking the optimistic approach of we're going to see an incredible player, grateful for the opportunity that he gets. And I think it's going to make, as I said on our show today, our pregame stuff, like I don't forget about Memphis. Losing mm-hmm. Steven Adams is a big deal.
Huge. Yeah. And Brandon Clark and
those things won't just go away. But no, I think if you've already played Memphis two times, or they're good for you.
Right.
Because I also think Taylor Jenkins and Ja connected pretty well. I said this to you guys before. Mm-hmm. It's just a guess. I have no knowledge of this, but they seem to really do well together.
Yep.
And without him, I don't know if Taylor's had the same voice with his guys. Well, his guy's back.
Yeah.
So I don't know about the first game, but I think you're going to see, like, hey, well, you remember, Memphis was famous for really talking a lot of stupid shit.
A lot of shit.
I think we might start seeing some of that again.
Well, Adam Silver was asked about John Morant while he was out in Vegas for the in-season tournament. And he said, quote, "We together laid out a program for him over the last several weeks. And to the best of my knowledge, he's complied with everything we've asked him to do. We're going to talk directly once at least this week before he comes back. And I think we'll review the program and just make sure the conditions are in place for him to succeed and be successful going forward." And I think, look, Adam is a sensitive guy when it comes to his players and he's in tune with them. He wants, you know, despite, again, as I always say, all the issues that we can point out about the NBA,
yeah,
he cares about the players and wants them to succeed. And so I do believe him. He is earnest in his. He's going to be connecting with Ja and like, look, what else we got to do to make sure you are successful? Because we don't want to see what happened prior happen again with you. So we'll see how that goes. Really quick last thing for Memphis, David.
Yeah.
So as I said, the record is what it is. So we should tell everybody this Friday, December 15th, opens up the trade window. Guys who were signed in the summer can now be moved. Between now and the deadline, which is February 6th, 7th, something like that. Memphis looking to make any moves, perhaps? Or are they like, we got to see what we're like with Ja? What do you think about Memphis and the trade market?
I mean, it's only a guess. They've been smart. This has been a good franchise, a well-run franchise. My guess is, yeah, they're going to want to. They got time. It may be too late. The guys they possibly could get may be gone. But I think it'd be smart for them to see where we're at with Ja. Steven Adams is gone for the year, so that's not an option. Mm-hmm. Is there another center? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll be different, but maybe different be good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think it'd be smart for them to, you know, get into January and see where they're at. And then hope there's enough players available that they can upgrade. But I don't think any of them are thinking this is our year anyway. It would be historically unprecedented to do what they to win a championship based on what's happened. So stay relevant, finish strong, and then come back, you know, hoping that you can win a one seed next year and go from there.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, for them to get back into that, I mean, they have to play like 700 basketball the rest of the season, right? Which is probably not likely.
But we can be reminded that Spoelstra's team went 11-30. This is going way back, and then finished 30-11. But it never happened before.
Right.
If it's going to happen like that again, it'd be a team like this.
Yes, correct.
Can you get Ja back?
Who brings back an all NBA caliber guard?
Yeah. who's still arising as a to
correct.
The age.
Yeah, and he's listen. Well, I hope he was working on the deficiency in his game
he's
during
time.
Right. You get Paul.
He's not going to be tired.
Got that right.
Like, this is going to be like, you don't remember this, but you'll know the name. The show, The Bionic Man.
Of course I remember The Bionic Man.
But we watched, I watched it on CBS when I was 12 or whatever. Like, it's going to be The Bionic Man versus a bunch of just regular dudes. Because Jaw's already close to that anyway.
Right.
Spectacular athlete.
Right.
And now he's been able to recover after workouts. Like, like when he first goes in, like, he's going to be like, all-star break. I just got started. So that last few weeks too, he might be crushing it before the all-star break.
Be a Ferrari, like a race car.
Yeah. Against a bunch of Matchbox cars.
Yeah. David, another player who's returning, looks like tomorrow night at home against the Warriors, is Bradley Beal, the Phoenix Suns. We have not seen all three of Durant, Booker, and Beal on the court yet. Durant's played the most games of anybody on the team.
Is that right? They've not been together yet?
They have not, because they started the year. Beal was out to start the year. Yeah. And then after that first game, Booker got hurt, missed like 7 or 8 games, right? So Durant's been the constant of the three. Now he's been out.
We heard that before.
Well, you know,
amazing.
He's, you know, like LeBron and Steph, these guys, these old dudes, they still got it. But Durant did hurt his ankle in that quarterfinal game against the Lakers. And so he did miss their last two games. So we'll see where he is going forward. And Grayson Allen's also got a growing thing, and he's been very good for them. But what does the return of Bradley Beal potentially mean to this team offensively?
I mean, the Brooklyn Nets group with Durant and Harden and Kyrie, incredible offensively. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, I think the best offense until what we're seeing now from the Pacers.
Yep.
Actually, I think there's 5 teams that are outpointing what that team was doing, but we got a ways to go. The grind of the season will probably bring all those guys down, or most of them. I think it can be a really special offense. Yeah. Bradley really knows how to play always, even as a freshman at Florida. I was very impressed with how he played, how he went about his business. Mm-hmm. He can really score, doesn't have to score. I don't think it has to be his defining quality necessarily. I think he's going to fit in very well with those guys offensively. We have our doubts about them defensively. We'll see how that goes. But that's what Frank Vogel, the head coach, to get them to connect and collectively defend. But they can really be a nightmare offensively if he's close to his former self. Mm-hmm.
And with backs, we don't know, right? Because backs are tricky. He might be fine. He comes back Tuesday. He looks great. Yep. And then in a week, it's like the back's tightening up again.
MPJ is at a different problem, but we know that roller coaster when you got back issues.
Without a doubt. But Phoenix, David, is someone who is probably going to look at the trade deadline, but they're in the same similar conundrum as Memphis because they don't know what they fully look like with everybody playing. So they're like, well, what do we do? I do think they do know something, which is it might be helpful. And although the goal is, well, if all three of those guys are healthy, we never have to play a single minute of any game without one of them on the floor at all times. So that is a true statement. But I still think organizationally wise, they could benefit from having an organizing type of guard. Tyus Jones, perhaps. I don't know if they have enough to get him, but somebody who can limit the turnovers, because this is where this team struggles when they turn the ball over a ton.
Yeah.
And somebody who can cut that out a little bit.
I think Beal will help. And I also think that having two of those three guys on the court frequently will also mitigate some of those turnover issues. I mean, offensively, they're 8th.
Yeah, they're very good on offense.
So they're going to be top 4, top 5, if not even higher than that. Top 2, top 3, if Beal can play. Defensively is the challenge. Mm-hmm. And so you got to figure that out. How do we get these guys to play better defense? And we have to go get someone.
Yeah,
I just don't know if they have much to offer. I would argue they probably don't.
Their draft capital is gone to Brooklyn and whoever else the next billion years.
The only option would be if I'm not at all suggesting this would happen, but if the Raptors can't get anything they want for OG and they know they're going to lose him in free agency this summer. You know, it's a bidding war at that point. Mm-hmm. And maybe they can win that bidding war. Maybe not.
Right,
We know who they're not going to trade. Mm-hmm. But it depends on what other people are going to bid.
Yeah.
Because he's going to cost a lot of damn money. Maybe they can't afford that. I haven't thought about that. But maybe they just assume that they're cost prohibitive to go get him.
Might be. Because I don't think they can get enough salary to match to go out the door.
But the other option is, and this is something I've talked to agents about, you may not care. Phoenix might feel like we're going to give up first-round picks and whatever young player they have, they don't have a lot. to get OG just for this year.
Yeah.
Try to win a championship. And then we'll see what we have to do in the offseason. Yeah.
I will say one of the players that gives them some athleticism and some youth on the wing is Nazir Little. And I just feel like that's a player that if he can continue to develop, you know, the shot kind of is somewhat streaky, but like I think he has a good shot and can shoot. It's just, you know, it's what David talks about all the time with young players. It's reps, you know. Can they stomach it? It's going to make mistakes. It's fine. Can you just deal with that, right? Because he provides a level of burst and athleticism that, I mean, Durant's 30 billion years old and, you know, these guys are old on the wing, you know. A nice, young, spry guy who can fly up and on the floor, like Christian Brown in the finals last year. Oh, what a wonder. That helps. So.
Every team should be looking for that. The athletic guy that's not so good now but can be good by, you know, May, mm-hmm. April, May, June. Mm-hmm. The challenge for Nasir in that position is Vogel's going to be wanting to play his stars more so they can start getting comfortable. That's going to come at the expense of these young guys who need more playing time, not less. That's what he's being paid the big bucks for. Let's see how he figures that out, because he's got to balance both those things. Get my guys reps collectively as the experienced all-stars, but also make sure I find other rotations with some of them, not all of them, so these young guys can get a chance to improve enough. We can trust them come postseason.
Yeah, 100%. Last team, David, before we get out of here, that as we start thinking about as the trade window opens on Friday, the Warriors. You know, Steph is still playing like an MVP player, but the rest of that roster ain't. No. And it's no other way to say it. He's been great. Everybody else, not so much. What do they even possibly have? First of all, what do they need aside from Draymond and Klay playing better, which maybe they will, maybe they won't. But I think they're small, David. Like, now that's been fine forever because the Cuisinart works. But I don't know if this version of the Cuisinart with those guys playing the way they are, minus Steph, if them being small is a good thing. Can they get some size somewhere, and how do they get it?
I don't really have many options. I don't think they're going to trade their young guys. Trading Klay is an answer. I don't think there's going to be anything for them. What they need is, well, those two guys got to play better. Wiggins has been terrible.
Terrible.
For whatever reason. And so they've got to fix it from within. I think they're out of options, really. Okay. Chris Paul's been pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been nice.
Yeah.
They've got to, and Looney's been okay, not great. He's taking a step down a little bit. They've got to play better. They've got to play better. And so because of their history, we're inclined to think that they'll figure this out. But we're less inclined than we might have felt 2 years ago. They just, you know, that team won 18 straight to start the season, or whatever it was,
right?
Whatever number win streak they had. It's Wiggins' issues and those guys' issues is real.
I will say, and, you know, it's hard not to do this, I think they're getting to that point, David, where they're allowing past performance to indicate future results. You hear it after every post game. Klay, I'm always going to bid on these guys. Look at our track record. Look at our history. I'm like, yeah, I understand. Look at your track record. Look at your history. No one can take that away from you. But just because you won the title 2 years ago, don't mean you're going to win it this year, right? Like, you're a much different player than you were then. Like, all of them are, right? You're 2 years older, just for starters.
Look, it didn't even work when they won 73 games in the same year.
There you go.
Still lost, you know, game 7.
Correct.
Yeah, and they're not that team.
Definitely not that team.
Yeah, Moody, Kuminga, I haven't looked at their metrics recently, but when I have seen them, I've been happy with the progress that those guys finally, you know, seem to be making. They still got to get better.
Yeah.
But they don't have to be plus players.
Right.
They can't be minus players. Right. Now, if they're not minus players now, there's a chance they grow into a plus player later. We have a long way to go. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that they're lucky in the sense that we're not going to be able to fix anything from outside, externally. Let's just all look inward and figure this out together day by day. And that allows them to be focused and not look over the shoulder all the time. Because I just don't see them trading one of those two young guys. They might, but I just don't see it. And Dario Saric is good. Maybe play him more than Looney a little bit. The five might help too, get more size.
He's been very good. David, it's interesting. I'm looking at the Western standings right now. So Minnesota 17-4, playing just incredible defense. And, you know, look, I'm not saying Minnesota's going to win the title, but like what I'm seeing. Oklahoma City, 3 games behind them, 14-7. And then everything else from 3 through 6, they're all a game to a game and a half back of the Timberwolves. Dallas, Denver, the Lakers, the Kings, and the Suns are at 5.5 back. I the West is kind of wide open, right? Like, I just wonder if that too makes teams be like, oh, you know, we're right there. It either makes them think, ooh, we're better than we are, so we go all in for something. Or in the Warriors' case, guys, we're not even playing well. And we're only here. If we just play better, we can get ourselves in that top six. Like that kind of false sense of, look where we are in standings.
Well, we're getting to a stage now where we're going to start talking a lot about who's going to get DeMar DeRozan, who's getting Alex Caruso, who's getting Zach LaVine, who's maybe getting Vooch, who's getting Tyus Jones, who's getting Kuzma, right? Like that doesn't mean those guys will be traded. Who's going to go to Miami? Like, here we go. Like, there's going to be, I'm writing an article this week about what maybe some of the deals that can be difference makers right now. Henry said on our show today, on our call today, is there a team that can make a deal now to win the championship? And the answer, of course, is no, because a lot of things can happen, but they can greatly increase their odds. There's a lot of players to get. I think we did a list in October with 64 players I listed as gettable guys I thought that could help your team a lot. So, we're going to be, it's like silly season almost. There's a lot of teams right there.
Yeah.
I mean, in the East, you've got the obvious ones, Miami, Milwaukee, who is, I think, is lesser so. Boston, of course, and Philly.
Yeah.
So there's four, and then the West probably has more.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, Clippers, Lakers, Phoenix, Denver, there's four just right there. Sacramento is five, right? We have in Minnesota six. Like, and who knows what – if John Morant comes back and they win five in a row, hello. we got some cooking.
You're right.
So, I think there's going to be an arms race, and first one in might win.
I think you're right. Right.
You may just have to go ahead and beat everyone's ante right away and get the guy that you know helps you more than anyone else on anyone's roster.
I think Caruso's the guy to look for. That's the one to me I think can really tip the scales because, first of all, defense, we know, and just a smart player, understands angles, all that. And then he's shooting 40-something percent from three. Like
last I looked, I'm looking right now. And he's at 47.1. Come on.
I mean, and he's got size. He's 6'5". I mean, so.
Yeah.
That's
I love that guy.
And it's high IQ. That's a winning player. That's a plus player. Like you. Yeah. I mean, Phoenix could totally use a guy like that for sure. They got nothing to give to get him though. So there goes that.
I don't think so.
All right, guys. We will see you on Thursday. Take care.